Listen local. Live from WJFF Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Patricio Roballo, in for Tim Bruno. On today's show, on Friday, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court reinstated the requirement for mail-in ballots to include a date, overturning previous decision by lower court. Investigative reporter Carter Walker will have more. Evergreen Meadow Academy, a new organization in Sullivan County that provides mental health services such as individual and group therapy, will be on the phone with us now to tell us more. And Science Joe Johnson will discuss the climate change impacting grape cultivation and about NASA's Europa Clipper mission to explore Jupiter's moon Europa. And Maggie Fitzpatrick will be live in the studio to talk about how changing our mindset can make difficult tasks feel more manageable. This is all happening on Radio Chatskill. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The suspect accused in the apparent assassination attempt against former President Donald Trump will face two federal firearms felony charges. Ryan Ruth is being held in Florida. Authorities say Secret Service agents fired after they saw the barrel of a semi-automatic rifle poking out of the bushes lining Trump's golf course. The acting Secret Service director says no shots were fired at Trump. But another shooter did fire at Trump last July, nicking his ear during a Pennsylvania rally. NPR's Odette Youssef reports there is a heightened level of concern there could be more acts of political violence with 7 weeks to go before the fall election.
There's alarm over copycat incidents. There's alarm that attacks might target a wider range of high-profile figures. And there's considerable concern that this period of heightened risk will continue beyond the election, regardless of who wins.
NPR's Odette Youssef reporting. Vice President Harris is sitting down with the National Association of Black Journalists later today. As NPR's Asma Khalid reports, this follows a similar conversation the organization had with former President Donald Trump earlier this summer.
The NABJ interview will take place at the NPR affiliate in Philadelphia, WHYY, and it'll be conducted by a trio of black journalists, including Tanya Mosley, who co-hosts Fresh Air. In late July, NABJ interviewed Trump at its annual convention. That interview was combative, and Trump made headlines for attacking Harris's racial identity. This interview will be fact-checked in real time by PolitiFact, as was also the case for Trump's. But one major difference is that this is happening in the key swing state of Pennsylvania, and the Harris campaign is trying to drive up black voter turnout as a crucial part of their strategy. Asma Khalid, NPR News.
Stocks opened higher this morning as the Commerce Department reported stronger-than-expected retail sales last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 30 points in early trading.
Retail sales rose by 0.1% in August following a big jump the month before. Spending at gas stations was down amid falling gas prices, but that left shoppers with more money to spend on sporting goods, gardening supplies, and internet retailers. Spending at grocery stores fell 0.6% in August, while spending at restaurants was flat. Industrial production rose by 0.9% last month, led by auto plants reopening after seasonal shutdowns in July. The retail sales and manufacturing reports are among the last pieces of economic data that Federal Reserve officials will review as they decide how aggressively to start cutting interest rates. The Fed is set to announce its rate cut decision tomorrow. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now up about 40 points. The Nasdaq is up about 125 points. This is NPR. Forecasters say there should be heavy rain in eastern Virginia today. A tropical storm system is breaking up as it moves north in the mid-Atlantic. Federal mediators are set to meet representatives from Boeing and its machinists union, who are on strike. The workers walked out Friday, demanding improvements and a contract offer. Boeing warns it may have to furlough some workers. Environmental groups are going to court today in Utah. They're expected to argue the state isn't doing enough to protect the Great Salt Lake. As NPR's Kirk Siegler reports, the groups are suing to force mandatory cuts in water usage.
The Great Salt Lake has shrunk to close to half its historical size, a consequence of the West's mega drought and upstream diversions for farms. Utah leaders are spending $1 billion on conservation, including paying willing farmers to switch to more efficient irrigation. But Earth Justice attorney Stu Gillespie says voluntary cutbacks are not enough.
It has provided just a small fraction of what's necessary to save this lake.
The lake's levels have rebounded some in the last 2 years after snowy winters. A ruling in the case isn't expected for a couple months after today's hearing. Kirk Siegler, NPR News, Salt Lake City.
The Senate is scheduled to vote today for the second time on legislation protecting the nationwide right to in vitro fertilization. Democrats want to highlight differences between them and Republicans who previously blocked the bill. It came after the Alabama Supreme Court ruled frozen embryos are legally children. Alabama clinics rushed to drop IVF treatment until state lawmakers provided some legal protections for them. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Lisa, a mattress brand who believes good sleep should come naturally. Lisa donates mattresses to nonprofits across the U.S. to improve their communities. Learn more at leesa.com.
And welcome back to Radio Chatsco. I'm Patricio Roballo, in for Tim Bruno. On Friday, a Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling restored the date requirement for mail-in ballots, voiding a lower court ruling. Investigator reporter Carter Walker of VoteBeat has been following the story right along and reporting to Radio Chatsco listeners. Jason Doe spoke to him on Friday evening right after he filed this story.
Sure. So earlier this summer, the ACLU and some other law firms here in Pennsylvania sued the Department of State and two counties on behalf of some voting right groups, arguing that the state's requirement that mail ballots be dated on the return envelope in order to be counted, they argued that that violated a provision that we have in our state's constitution that gives voters the right to vote. The lower court ruled that yes, in fact, that did violate the state's constitution, and it said that counties couldn't reject voters' mail ballots just because they didn't handwrite the date on the outer return envelope.
Then that was challenged, and who challenged it?
So a couple of days after that ruling, the Republican National Committee and the state GOP, they appealed the ruling up to Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which obviously is our highest court. And they were arguing, among other things, that because the ACLU and the voting rights groups hadn't included all 67 counties as parties to the case, since they had just included Allegheny County and Philadelphia, they argued that the case wasn't properly filed and should be thrown out for that reason.
Yeah, and that technicality, the high court actually sided with them based on one of those technicalities, right?
That's right. The Supreme Court said that because the plaintiffs hadn't joined all of those counties as part of the case, that it wasn't filed properly, and the lower court, the Commonwealth Court, shouldn't have taken it up in the first place. The parties, they had tried to include the Secretary of State as one of the people they were suing, which would have given them the ability to sue in Commonwealth Court, but the Supreme Court said, no, that just doesn't cut it. You can't just add the Secretary of the State and make it relevant.
No, and in the article you mentioned that Republican appeal, you know, included that technical charge, but also other claims. And I was wondering if you just tell me what some of the other claims were, and did the court acknowledge those?
The court didn't acknowledge any of the other claims. In fact, it didn't rule on the merits, the underlying merits of the argument either, whether or not this dating requirement does violate the Constitution. The opinion was just one page. Hey, this wasn't properly filed in Commonwealth Court. Therefore, the Commonwealth Court didn't have the right to issue a ruling. So that means the door is still open on this case. It could be refiled with all the counties as plaintiffs. There's also a legal mechanism where the ACLU and the voting rights groups could just skip past the Commonwealth Court and go right to the Supreme Court if they wanted to. So still somewhat of an open question here.
But of course, even if they go back and try to do this again, that won't do anything for the upcoming major national election.
It could. Like I said, there is a method by which the state Supreme Court could take up this issue very quickly and settle the matter. Yes, there's a authority that the Supreme Court has called a King's Bench authority. And what that means is they can, if they see an issue that they think needs to be addressed immediately, they can say that it's allowed to skip the normal court process of coming up to them through the lower courts, and they can just ask parties to argue it directly to them. So there's a possibility that that could still happen.
It's possible, but is it likely?
It's hard to say. I mean, we have seen these King's Bench petition cases go up to the Supreme Court right before an election before. So there is definitely precedent for it happening in Pennsylvania, and I wouldn't rule it out yet.
One of the reasons why this might still play out in such a short time frame must have something to do with the fact that this isn't going to impact the printing of the ballots. This isn't anything about what's actually on the ballots. It's what the people who are mailing them in put on the outer envelope, right?
That's right, yeah. This deals with what's going to happen after voters get those ballots in hand. Now, there has been some challenge to getting the ballots actually printed and in the hands of voters. Of course, we're still several weeks away from the election. But, yeah, this case deals with dating the envelope.
Well, I heard another national news outlet this morning talk about how, you know, early voting starts in Pennsylvania next week. And we've done reporting here and with our news partners trying to explain to people that technically there isn't early voting in Pennsylvania. There are these mail-in ballots, and those can be mailed in earlier than the election day, but they aren't counted until after polls close on election day. And in our rural area of Northeast Pennsylvania that we broadcast to, the election officials are saying, like, we don't even think the ballots are going to be ready by that early date that some national outlets are putting out there. So I just wanted to remind folks of that as well.
Yes, that's all right. There's been a lot of reporting recently that early voting is supposed to start next week, but as you said, not the case. We don't even have our ballots printed yet because there's some challenges to who can appear on that ballot.
I want to get to the implications of this news if it doesn't go through this King's Bench authority. But first, what about reactions to the news? You heard from Governor John Shapiro, right?
Yes, I did hear from the governor's office on this. They were not happy with the ruling. They said it was unfortunate that the court did not side with voters and that the court should make it clear that a inconsequential dating error shouldn't prevent a voter from casting their ballot. Saw a similar statement from the Department of State, which, of course, is under the authority of the governor. ACLU was not happy. The Republican National Committee Chairman Michael Whatley said this was a huge win to protect the vote in Pennsylvania by implementing common sense mail ballot safeguards.
So now, and your reporting is very clear about this, that, you know, this could have implications for thousands of votes. Like, what are the implications? What are possible ramifications come election day?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, just to be clear, if listeners haven't gotten it yet, the bottom line is, for at least the time being, unless there's another ruling, that ballots will have to be dated properly in order to be counted. Now, those were the rules that we were operating under in the primary election. And overall, there was about 8,500 ballots rejected for errors that voters make, like dating and signature and not putting the ballot in a secrecy envelope. And of those 8,500, about 4,400 of them were rejected for dating problems. So that's a big chunk of the ballots at risk. We had a lot lower turnout in the primary than we're going to have in November. So it's likely that that 4,400 number is going to be many more times higher.
Okay, and what else are you watching for on this particular story?
Yeah, well, I guess the next thing is just we're going to be keeping our eyes open to see if the Supreme Court decides to just take it up on their own, if the parties decide to petition the Supreme Court to take it up. I don't think this will be the last we hear about this issue.
No, and whatever we hear next, we're going to want to talk to you about it and also let everybody know what they got to do with that envelope.
Right.
All right. Well, Carter Walker, thank you so much for talking to us on such a busy day. This is great reporting. Thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Jason, for that. That was Jason Dole on last night's Local Edition. Local Editions happens every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. This is Radio Chatskill. We'll be right back, and we'll talk to Evergreen Meadow Academy, which provides mental health services in Sullivan County and beyond.
Can two people with different political beliefs still have a meaningful conversation? I'm Ronald Kelson, and I'm working with Radio Catskill on StoryCorps One Small Step, bringing strangers and our community together, one conversation at a time. We are having conversations in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania all year long, and you should be a part of it. Sign up now at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, as part of our election coverage, The Latino Factor, How We Vote, come with us on a taco tour charting prices in San Diego, one of America's most expensive and best taco cities.
I know that some of them are charging close to $5. You know, I'm like, that's tacos. How ridiculous.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Patricio Roballo. Girls who have experienced trauma are at much higher risk of self-harm and suicidal thoughts. The middle school years are a crucial time for intervention, and this is when we have the greatest chance to positively impact their future. Evergreen Meadow Academy, a new agency in Sullivan County, is stepping in to help. They provide mental health services, including individual and group therapy, as well as trauma-informed interventions. Joining us on the phone now to discuss more of Evergreen Meadow is the Executive Director, Adrian Jensen. Adrian, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Yes. So I gave a sort of a brief intro exactly what Evergreen Meadow Academy is, but if you want to tell us more about what the Academy is all about.
So, Evergreen Meadow Academy, about 3 years ago, had a vision to bring a state-of-the-art residential treatment center for middle school-age girls who were at risk of self-harm or suicide due to trauma. As well as the treatment center, there would be an academy. So in the interim, Evergreen Meadow has been providing on-site telehealth programming, and we're getting ready to have a inaugural event. We'd like to tell you a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, you're having a benefit dinner. This is happening on Monday at the Arnold House. Congratulations. It's sold out.
Yes, thank you.
Which is great. And that benefit dinner, not only is obviously those who are attending are helping the Evergreen Academy, but the Evergreen Academy is having some honorees honored that night. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. I think that it's a, how do they say it? If it takes a village or a person, that's what we're seeing. We have three honorees, the Center for Discovery, which Sullivan County folks, I'm sure all know. I think that our visions pair really nicely with each other in that I know that Center for Discovery champions, having a healthful nature-based healing, and Evergreen Meadow, really is dedicated to integrating nature into our healing process, having that kind of holistic recovery. So Center for Discovery donated 34 acres of land to Evergreen Meadow Services in Rock Hill. And so we are honoring Center for Discovery. We're also honoring Assembly Member Aileen Gunther, which everybody knows, who has been an incredible advocate for mental health, and has also brought an important awareness to the adolescent mental health crises that we're also familiar with right now. And she has helped to secure funding to support young girls in Sullivan County, but also across the state of New York. So we're honoring her. And then the third entity that we're honoring is the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan. And they were really the first to provide assistance for our Sullivan County services, and they really helped to open doors for us. They support organizations, students, women and children, and in that they're supporting us as well. And I just wanted to, you know, have a shout out to them, because I know exactly a month later, on the 23rd of October, they're celebrating their 25th anniversary. Mm. And, you know, I do have to say, I think that they are amazing at supporting community needs and working with their donors, you know, to make sure that, that whatever their intentions were for the money that they have donated is honored. So just wanted to put that shout out to them as well. But we've, you know, we've had support in addition to that from federal, you know, federal entities, state, local, you know, individual donors, you know, so from so many different places. And that's been really wonderful to see that kind of support for these teen girls and for their families.
Yeah, it seems like Monday night, it looks like it's going to be gearing up to be a good evening for Evergreen Meadow and honoring those folks. That's good stuff there. I'm wondering, as you're speaking, is if maybe someone else is wondering if they have a person in their life who might need your services. Well, let's start there. How does a young girl end up at the academy? How does that happen? What ways could that happen?
Sure. Well, I, you know, simplest would be to go on to our website, which is evergreenmeadowacademy.org. And you can see the services that we provide and contact us from there. You know, some girls may be recommended by a therapist, by, you know, perhaps outpatient, as, you know, from the hospital. They may be recommended to our empowerment group, for instance, because, you know, we don't just do intervention. We also do prevention. So, you know, they might be recommended through their school. You know, all of those ways are ways that they can reach us.
Right. And you are already making, you know, while as right now, you don't have a physical space. Is that correct? Or am I speaking wrong here?
So that's correct. We're looking to break ground in 2025 with our state-of-the-art residential treatment center and academy. In the meantime, we have a space that we are just opening up in Liberty, New York, which is just, you know, very modest, one office, where we will be able to do in-person, you know, therapy. And then we also have been working with Liberty Middle School, doing a girls empowerment group.
Right. And can you talk
and
more
then,
about
course,
that?
You know,
about
we've also been doing...
Well, I'm sorry. I mean to cut you off there.
That's my fault.
Okay. No, can you talk more about that? Exactly how that partnership... I know we had a recent, not too long ago, when the co-founder, Sally, on with us earlier. Can you talk more about that partnership of how you connected with Liberty Middle School?
We made an offer kind of en masse to Sullivan County Schools because, you know, we are a statewide organization, but nonetheless, we are based in Sullivan County. Our academy and treatment center will be based in Sullivan County as well. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we acknowledge the vast need that there is in Sullivan County to provide mental health services for middle school age girls. And so Liberty Middle School was quick on the take and took us up on it. And so we've been using this as our initial school to develop our program for the empowerment group. And it's been amazing. This is our third season. So we started off with one group that had mixed grades. And then we moved from there to last year we had fifth, sixth was one group and seventh, eighth was another group. And this year we've decided to open up yet another group. So we'll have the fifth graders and the eighth graders having kind of unique needs will have their own groups. And then the sixth, seventh graders will have a group together. So the fifth graders were, you know, just kind of working on more basic skills and just kind of acclimating them to the program. Sixth and seventh graders are really getting into, you know, the work of the empowerment group. And then those eighth graders are preparing for high school, which is really, you know, can be a daunting time. And so a lot of what we're doing with the eighth graders is preparing them for that, including public speaking and working on social interactions and even talking about career options and having people come in and speak with them about those kind of things.
That's great. And you say you've been doing this already for three seasons at the Liberty Middle School. Are there plans to hopefully expand to other school districts?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are, we will be working in the Bronx and Poughkeepsie, and we will also be gradually opening up to other school districts within Sullivan County.
That's great. Now, once the physical building is built and you have room there, the goal is to have actual students actually stay there for a while. Is that correct? Am I remembering it right?
Yeah, you have it absolutely right, Patricia. So it will be a 24-bed center, and then we will have the academy there for those students as well. But that doesn't mean that we will cease the prevention work that we're doing, the on-site in-school work that we're doing. So that will continue.
Right. And you're breaking ground at that new facility in 2025 in Rock Hill. Is that correct?
That's what we're looking for, yes.
That's what you're looking for, right. Well, so you have things that are happening. And they said you have the benefit dinner happening up at their Arnold House on Monday, honoring those three organizations and folks that are doing great things already. Adrian, before we go, is there anything else we have not touched on you want folks to know about Evergreen Academy?
Well, you know, I would just say that, you know, we fortunately and unfortunately we are sold out, but we do have an auction that is happening during our event, a silent auction. And so, you know, if there are any organizations or individuals who would like to donate an item or an experience, you know, we are happy to receive that. And I think that you could call our external affairs representative, Gina Cagliari, at 917-860- 917-860. Again, that's 917-860-9450. So that would be great. And I also want to give a shout out to some of our girls empowerment girls who will be at the event and will be singing a song that was created through some funding with the STEAM Fund Foundation, Beth and Scott Birko helped to create that. So that's going to be exciting for them, but also for the guests to get to enjoy.
Yeah, definitely sounds like a nice evening. And good thing, yeah. As you said, they're also showcasing what Evergreen Meadow Academy has done and will do in the future. So all good stuff. We were talking to the executive director for Evergreen Meadow Academy, Adrian Jensen. Adrian, thank you so much for talking to me on the program. I do really appreciate it. And good luck on Monday's event.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Just a note, Evergreen Meadow Academy is an underwriter for Radio Catskill. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll learn about NASA's Europa Clipper mission to explore Jupiter's moon Europa, searching for signs of life in its subsurface ocean. This is Radio Catskill.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes. Exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9. Here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, an effort to remind the country of the humanity in all of us. I'm Isabel Braverman, and we are pairing up strangers in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania to have conversations, not debates. Get to know your neighbors. Let's take one small step away from division and toward each other. Sign up at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Patricio Roballo. Science Joe Johnson this week is talking about how climate change is changing grape farming, which includes shifts in growing seasons. He also covers NASA's Europa Clipper mission, which will explore Jupiter's moon Europa to look for signs of life. Radio Catskill's Jason Dole spoke with Joe about these topics.
We've got three stories for you this week, a couple having to do with climate change. The first one is climate change in viticulture, in other words, the growing of grapes. There was an article on NPR, I believe on one of the podcasts, about Napa Valley out in California and how they're trying to adapt to climate change, because that's where Cabernet Sauvignon grapes are grown, and that is the most popular wine in the world and the most expensive wine. And it's also the adaptations that they're trying to try. So I dug a little farther, and I found in the March 26th edition of Nature magazine an article on climate change and the adaptations of wine production. Now, we tend to think about climate change quite a bit, but we don't think about the fine details of it, like how is it going to affect this crop and how is it going to affect that crop. So I looked into it, and climate change is going to have a big effect on viticulture. It's going to change the temperature, the precipitation, the humidity in areas that traditionally grow a lot of wine, those mid-latitude places like California, the Napa Valley, of course, out in California, but in southern France, in Spain, in Italy, those areas are getting warmer and drier. And so it's going to have a big effect on the yield, the composition and sugar content of the grapes, the quality, the harvest time, what pests are even going to affect the grapes, and diseases that are going to affect them. So all these places that I previously mentioned, Napa Valley, the Finger Lakes, southern France, northern Spain, and Italy, those are all in the mid-latitudes. And they grow the grapes there because that's perfect area for them. It's relatively dry, warm enough, but not too hot. You know, if it gets too wet, they have a lot of disease issues with grapes. I grow grapes myself, so I know that. But you don't want it like having too much precipitation. So about 90% of the traditional wine regions, especially on the coastal and lowland areas, could be at risk by the end of the century. And because of that, they're trying all kinds of adaptations. These areas have experienced more droughts and more heat waves. And so it looks like they're going to try to adapt some things, maybe grow new strains of grapes, maybe change how they grow them. But it also looks like there's going to be some newly suitable areas in Washington State, for instance, not a big wine area. But if the climate change keeps going in the direction that it is, Washington State, Oregon, Tasmania is looking at like one of the big areas that they'll be growing grapes. And northern France, which is traditionally not known as a grape growing area, may in fact be warm enough and, or I should say, cool enough and have the right precipitation, etc. So it's a big deal.
Makes me wonder what it means for our own Finger Lakes region in New York State, which is well known for growing grapes, but isn't as well known as some of these other areas. It makes me wonder if that would improve or open up the options for New York grape growers and vintners to move into different types.
Well, the Finger Lakes, because it's in the middle of the continent, is going to be less likely to experience a lot of these climate changes. And so it may be the winner in this. We may see the Finger Lakes continue to be a great growing area.
Now, next up, you've got this concept of basalt dust helping crops. And, you know, I would not think basalt would have anything to do with crops because it's a hard, heavy rock.
It is. It is. I saw this article on the BBC, and it got me doing a little bit of digging. And yeah, basalt dust. Basalt, if you remember from Earth Science, is an ultramafic igneous rock. It's very dark, almost most of the time almost black, very fine grained. It's got a lot of calcium. It's got a lot of magnesium. It's got a lot of iron in it. But what they're finding is this, is that basalt dust will react with carbon dioxide. I got to get into the chemistry a little bit here, okay?
All right.
So the carbon dioxide reacts with water. And it creates a weak carbonic acid. Carbonic acid is the same stuff that's in soda. It's kind of like a form of natural acid rain. Rain is naturally acidic. So the carbonic acid is then going to react with the crop, with the basalt dust being spread on the croplands to form calcite and magnesite, both of which are fairly stable, fairly non-soluble minerals. That would then just be added to the soil. So it'll remove carbon dioxide from the air by chemically reacting with it.
And what are the benefits of this? And does it benefit the plants?
Well, it does benefit the plants. We have seen increased crop yields of up to 9% in one study that Cornell is doing on hemp. There's studies going on all around the world. I found articles just, you know, from Australia, from Africa, from all kinds of places where they're trying this. The concept really came to the forefront in back in the early 2000s, and it's just now being tried in some large scale trials and experiments. And so there's a lot of benefits for it. Right now, Cornell is trying to figure out the optimum amount per acre. They found that 20 tons per acre increased yields by about 9%. But 40 tons per acre actually decreased yields per acre. So they're trying to kind of fine-tune the amount that they're going to apply.
All right. And then does this also have a benefit for fighting climate change?
Well, sure. If this was widely adopted, it's been estimated that 2 to 4 billion tons of carbon dioxide can be removed from the atmosphere every year. They'll also reduce the amount of carbon dioxide that would be needed to produce the fertilizer, because if this can take the part of some of the fertilizer, then we'd have to produce less. It's very easy to scale up. The farmers already have the equipment for spreading fertilizer, and it will spread the rock dust just as easily. There's a lot of basalt dust very available. It is the most common rock on the planet. And in the end, it's going to theoretically reduce ocean acidification as well.
All right, so there's a lot of benefits here. But just thinking about climate change and all the things here on Earth is making me feel like I want to escape for a little bit. Is there a way we could go out to space? Is anybody going back to the Jovian system?
Well, our last story today is about the Europa Clipper. And we talked about this last April, but I wanted to bring it up again because this October 10th, the Europa Clipper will be launching. Europa, if you remember, yes, is part of the Jovian system, the Jupiter system. It's one of the Galilean satellites that Galileo, of course, discovered in 1610. Europa, Callisto, Ganymede, and Io, my favorite, the pizza planet. Europa is about 90% the size of Earth's moon. So if you could actually replace our moon with Europa, it would look about the same size, but it would be far brighter because the surface of Europa is covered with ice, water ice. And we think we have good evidence that that ice layer is about 10 to 15 miles thick, but below that is a salty ocean about 60 to 100 miles deep, and beneath that is rock. Now, at the same time you have all of this going on, you also have Europa being kind of squeezed and kneaded by Jupiter as it orbits closer and farther away. So there's a heat source, too.
And so the gravity of this giant gas planet is creating tension in the physical material right. of this moon.
Yeah, it stretches it and releases it, stretches it and releases it. And it's almost like a piece of metal. If you bend it back and forth, it gets warm. And so this is why Europa, if you look at the surface, has giant cracks in its surface because of this stretching and breaking. So we think that this is probably the best candidate in our solar system other than Earth for life to occur. So Europa is going to not be orbiting Europa. I'm sorry. The Europa Clipper is not going to be orbiting Europa. It's going to be orbiting Jupiter. It's on this really highly elliptical orbit because Jupiter's a nasty place. It has some really terrible radiation bands. And so it orbits into, you know, very close to Europa. And some of the orbits are going to go within 16 miles of the surface. So we're going to get some real high resolution pictures and some great data, but then it loops far out away from Jupiter so that it can survive. Once again, it's some nasty radiation going on there.
It's probably too late for this because they had to launch years ago for this to happen. But what if we sprinkled basalt dust on Europa? That's what I want to know. Well, Joe, thank you so much for going over the latest science news with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much, Jason, for that. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we have live in our studio Maggie Fitzpatrick to tell us how our mindset can make difficult tasks feel more manageable. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Elena Moore, and this election season, make a big impact on your community by putting a big hole in your garage where that unused vehicle is collecting dust. Donating your car, truck, or other vehicle is one way to help sustain public radio in your community. When you fill in your ballot this November, you'll know that your donated vehicle helped keep voters informed. Here's how to get started.
Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, why are so many men choosing to skip college?
Typical boy behavior doesn't fit as well with good student behavior.
And why is overall college enrollment dropping?
Hey, listen, I can invest in cryptocurrency. I can be an Instagram influencer.
We conclude our series about the strange state of higher education. That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. This afternoon at 1 o'clock on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Patricio Roballo. In today's fast-paced world, maintaining healthy habits can feel like an uphill battle, especially when motivation is fleeting. Many of us fall into a trap of waiting for inspiration to strike before taking action. Writer and coach Maggie Fitzpatrick is live in our studio right now to tell us how to avoid these traps and get going. Welcome back to the program, Maggie.
Good morning. Thank you.
All right. So yeah, you know, we all fall into these traps sometimes because we have so many things to do. In your article, you point out that waiting for motivation often results in inconsistent behavior, which prevents us from reaching our goals eventually. We're going to talk more about that and how can we avoid these traps?
Yeah, definitely. So when it comes to reaching any of our goals, right, we all know that consistency is key. It's a phrase that we hear all the time for a reason because it's the truth. But that doesn't make it easy, right? It doesn't make being consistent easy, especially when there's a lot of things that might you know, be a little bit more enjoyable to do at the moment, right? And so it can be challenging to take action on those things that we need to do to move us forward when maybe sitting on the couch sounds a little bit more enjoyable. So it is hard to stay consistent and do those things, but it doesn't mean that it's impossible. And this is one of those situations where I really like to look at mindset as my biggest tool that I use to, you know, overcome this.
All right. And what are some of the, so I guess, action steps that we can take? Because, you know, I understand you come from a long day outside and you just want to get home, maybe turn on some TV or doom scroll on Instagram.
Yes.
What can we sort of get into? What things can we do to sort of change our mindset to get to meet our goals?
Yeah, so this is something that I just want to like preface by saying that you're not going to do this one time and it's going to fix it forever. This is a continuous battle. I would almost call it a battle, right? I am constantly having these thoughts in my head. So I just want to like normalize that, you know, like it is not something where one day you're going to just quote unquote fix it, right? And you're not going to struggle with not wanting to take action anymore. If that does happen, let me know. I'd be really curious, but it hasn't happened for me yet. So that is something really important. But what I like to do is I like to think about the difference between how I would feel to do whatever it is I want to do right now. So sit on the couch, watch TV, whatever, versus how I would feel if I actually did the healthy habit that I'm avoiding, right? So that could be something physical health related. It could be your workout. It could be meal prepping. It could be any of those things. It could be cleaning up your kitchen so you wake up to, you know, a clean space in the morning. It could be putting your laundry away. It could be anything, right? And when I'm in that cycle or that thought pattern of, oh, I really just want to sit here. I don't want to get up. I don't want to do it. I am comfortable. I'm cozy. I want to stay. I just ask myself, how am I going to feel if I take that action afterwards, right? Afterwards, okay, yeah, maybe right now in this moment, I am happy with that decision because it's keeping me comfortable. But afterwards, I'm going to feel regretful because I didn't set myself up for success, right? Where if I got up and spent even just 5 minutes doing that task, I'm going to feel a lot better later. And that question really helps me get up and take action. And it doesn't usually happen immediately. Sometimes it does, but sometimes I kind of have to sit and ponder or stew on that thought for a little bit, and eventually I will get up. And it happened yesterday. It's like you would think that this happens all the time because it does. I was on the couch and I was watching a soccer game and I really just wanted to stay there. But I knew that I would feel a lot better if I got up and put my laundry away and, you know, cleaned up the kitchen. And so I put the game on my iPad and I brought it with me into the kitchen and I did all of that stuff and I put the towels away. And afterwards, I felt tremendously better. When I woke up this morning, I was so happy because my home was clean, right? And I wasn't waking up to a mess, which then would have sent me into a spiral for today, which then would have made it even harder. And then tonight, it would have been harder. And that probably would have led into tomorrow, right? And so that thought process of what would feel really good to have done, to have completed, to have accomplished? I really like to ask myself that question because it almost makes it a lot simpler, right? It seems a little bit silly, like, well, yeah, of course I would feel great to have that done. So why am I not going to do it?
Right. I guess it's just to start. A perfect example was me this morning. I try to make a vow to myself, I'm going to do more walking. Because I used to do morning walks every day, you know, try to do 3 miles of walking. And I dropped off a little bit towards the summer. And I've been itching to get back out there. And I said, oh, yes, and Monday, I'm going to start. Monday didn't happen for me. So today I woke up and I was really tired because I stood up late the night before writing. And I was like, just 30 more minutes of sleep or something. And I said, no. I said, okay, I'm running late already for work. So why don't I just go out there at least walk for 15 minutes? And I did. I just walked just 15 minutes of my full walk. I came back inside and I got ready and made my bed, make sure my bed is made before I leave my house. But I felt great. I felt like I accomplished something.
Yeah.
And I feel like I think it's always to me is the start. Once you get over that hump of the start, Or even like, I feel that sometimes with procrastination, when I'm delaying something, I know I have to do something on my to-do list that I'm avoiding. But once I do, it's like, it wasn't a big deal when I finally did it.
Usually that is the case, right? We're like, oh, wow, I really made that a lot harder than it ended up being. Yeah. And so to get there, that is that question, or, you know, that difference that I like to think about is, if I did this thing that is comfortable, how am I going to feel later?
Right.
And if I do that thing that is my healthy habit, the, you know, the task or workout or whatever that I should do, how am I going to feel later? And I like to think about my future self, and I like to think about, you know, what is going to happen later as a result of the action that I'm going to take now, because it helps shorten that procrastination time, right? I'm not saying you're going to eliminate it. I haven't figured out how to eliminate it, but I'm always thinking about, how can I shorten that time between where I am now and where I want to be? And just thinking about that really helps. You know, you could go down a spiral of, oh, you know, you need to do this, or you're a bad person if you don't do it. And, you know, it's easy to fall into those thought processes too, or shame ourselves or make ourselves feel guilty. But that doesn't create long lasting change. And it actually doesn't allow you to feel the positive result at the end, right? So you're forcing yourself into this action. You feel miserable while you're doing it, and you feel miserable afterwards, which is not really a great result, right? So I am always trying to like reframe it, right? And think about it more positively, and think about, what can I do now to help myself later?
Right. And make those, I guess, making those small steps. Is that recommended to try to take sort of small steps if things, what do you have any recommendations when people feel overwhelmed? Like you say, you have your laundry there, you want to watch the soccer game and you delay it. And then you know that you have two bags of laundry you have to fold. Is there a sort of tips to when you feel overwhelmed by their goals and sort of struggle to get started?
Yeah, that's what I do. I think it, you know, can be a little bit different for different people, but what I find most is, how can we just like focus on a smaller part of it, right? So how can we, instead of looking at the entire task, all of the laundry in your whole house, right, every workout you have to do ever, meal prepping for the entire week, how can we really zoom in and focus on, okay, what is the first step that I need to do? Because I can't accomplish the whole thing if I don't accomplish the first step, right? And so we don't need to focus on every single thing that's going to come after that, because we can't do any of those things until we do the first one, right? So if we can just zoom in, focus on that first one, get that out of the way, then it makes it a lot easier. We're starting to build some momentum, right? Momentum is created. It's not something that just appears out of nowhere. And so if we can start to take that first step, then it'll help us take the other ones after, and it won't feel as daunting anymore, because like you said, you know, you build up in your mind this whole, oh my gosh, this is going to take forever, it's going to be really challenging, and then you start to take action and you realize you completed it in like 5 minutes. You're like, okay, that really wasn't that bad.
That's true. No, but also you mentioned about beating yourself up, which does happen. Like you say, I don't want to do the laundry right now, it's going to take too long, and you start doing scrolling for 30 minutes, and then you find out that, you know, 30 minutes I could have than the laundry. That is a struggle though, for sometimes, you know, beating yourself up over doing things that you haven't accomplished. But you said that's sort of a negative thing not to do. You don't want to beat yourself up, give yourself, I guess, some leeway. Is that a correct way to say it? Or?
Yeah, I think like giving yourself grace is a phrase.
Grace, that's a good word.
A phrase that I like to use. I kind of just think about it like this. Okay, I procrastinated for 30 minutes, for 3 hours, for 3 days, however long it was, right? That time's already gone, and I can spend more time and energy beating myself up over it, which sometimes I do, or I can just kind of hard stop right now and move on, right? And if we spend more time and energy focusing on what happened or didn't happen in the past, now we're kind of just recreating that again. Right. It's the same thing as when we worry about something that hasn't happened yet. Right. We're spending all this time and energy worrying about something that hasn't happened yet. And now when it happens, we worry all over again.
Yeah.
Right. And so I like to try to remind myself that what happened happened, and I have the power right now in this moment to choose the next action step that I'm going to take. Nobody else has that power for me besides me, and I can always make a new decision. So any moment of any day, I can always make a new decision. I can always start something new. I can always stop something. I can always change my mind. And the more I allow myself to do that, if we can allow ourselves to change our mind, to take action, to stop doing something, it really frees us from that burden, right? And so it really just comes down to choice. And I kind of talk about this in the end of the article too, is that even, you know, no matter how many tools you have, no matter how many mindset shifts you learn, or, you know, questions you learn to ask yourself that you like, you still have to choose to do it. Right. You still have to choose to ask yourself the question, what would make me feel better later? And then you still have to get up and do it. It still comes down to making that choice and taking that action. And you still have to do that. So it's kind of the same thing here when I get caught in a cycle of beating myself up. As soon as I realize that I'm doing it, and I realize that I'm, you know, spending my time and energy in a way that is not productive for me, I have to choose to stop. And that can be challenging, but the first time you let yourself do that, it's going to get a little bit easier the next time, right? And so it's okay to recognize that, you know, you haven't spent your time in the way that was most ideal, or you haven't been setting yourself up for success. But if we continue to ruminate about that, we're just going to continue the same pattern. So we have to figure out how can we get ourselves to stop that so we can change and move forward.
Right. Another thing you talk about in your article is about being consistent. How important is that to sort of, because you say, okay, yeah, I went for a walk today I'm healthy and all that. But you got to do it, I got to do it the next day, and I got to do it the next day after that. So consistency is a key to having success in your goal making. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is correct. And I use this phrase a lot, but consistently being imperfect is much better than inconsistently being perfect, right? So you could go for your ideal 3-mile walk one time and never do it again. It's like, okay, yeah. Well, that was great for that day, but it's not really giving me any lasting results or changes, right? Where you're better off missing the 3-mile mark, doing your 15 minutes every day and having that consistency, the repetition, right? Doing it again and again, you're going to see a lot more results from that than you will from hitting your goal one time. Right. And so it's hard. I identify as a perfectionist. Like, I understand that. And I really struggle with that sometimes of like, oh, I don't have enough time to do the whole thing.
Right.
Or I don't, you know, I'm not going to be able to do it perfectly. So I'm not going to start at all. And it doesn't lead to success. It's just a flawed way of thinking when it comes to being successful. And so that's something we really have to try to break. And the consistency, even if it's imperfect, is much more important and is going to get us a lot farther than worrying about it being perfect all the time.
Right. And I know for a fact when I'm consistent with my walking and I miss a day or don't go for some reason, I do feel it.
Mm-hmm.
I think something's off here. I haven't gone for my morning walk or afternoon walk there. So consistency is key for this. Maggie, while we're wrapping up here, do we have anything else we want to say about your article on either finding motivation or, you know, not going into those traps in prioritizing sort of the long-term benefits over short-term leads to, you know, sustainable process?
Yeah, I think the only thing really left to say is that, going back to the title, sometimes you just have to get up and do it anyway,
right?
If you don't feel like it, right? You just have to do it anyway. And that's uncomfortable and it's annoying and it's frustrating, but it's just the truth, right? And if you're going to choose success, if you're going to choose health, if you're going to choose, you know, improving yourself and living a healthy life, then that's the choice that you're going to have to make. That's the choice that comes with it, is that you're not always going to feel like it and you just have to get up and do it anyway.
Absolutely. We're talking to writer and coach Maggie Fitzpatrick, who has a column that comes out today.
Yes.
In the Sullivan County Democrat. You can check that out on newsstands. So you can check it out online at sedemocratonline.com. Maggie, thank you so much for joining me. We speak to Maggie Fitzpatrick every week on a Tuesday, letting us know how we can get healthy, not only in our body, but in our mind. So thank you, Maggie, for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And that does it for the local edition. You can hear this episode and or our local programming at our website at wjffradio.org, or you can sign up for a weekly newsletter and you get local news and station events straight to your inbox. Stay informed and inspired. Sign up at wjffradio.org. I've been your host, Patricio Robayo. Thank you for listening. Let's take a quick look at the weather. Today is partly sunny with a high near 79. Tonight, increasing clouds with a low around 51. And on Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 75. And on Wednesday night, chance of showers, mainly before 2 a.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 57. And on Thursday, a slight chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a high near 76. A slight chance of showers before 2 a.m. on Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 56.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear music to strip by, music for a 50-foot woman, and Buddy Collette's Swingin' Shepherds. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me this week at the Underground Martini Bunker for the Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.